How's it going today, guys? We're back here live in the studio for the episode of Hot Takes with TP3. Once again, I am your host, TP3, coming to you live on Tuesday, March 26th. Good grief, I'm done one so long, I already messed up the day. But March 26th, 2023, guys, or 2024, guys, it is another baseball season. This is our first podcast of baseball season, the first one back here on the channel in a while. I am joined by none other than Bid Bolton. Bid hasn't been on here in a while, guys, so y'all know it's time to talk about some baseball. Bid, how are we doing today?
Doing good, man. Good to be back. First time since probably COVID. So been a while, ready to get back to it. I know a little trouble in the intro. I'm sure you're probably a little tired from all the college basketball, all the Ohtani news, just all the stuff been going on lately, man. It's understandable.
Yeah, man, it is definitely, let's put it this way, the last like 48 hours for me doing a crash course on MLB, going into we had a fantasy draft last night, and then this podcast today, and just like prepping up and whatnot to bet on all the games for the next coming days. It would go along with all the college basketball, NBA, everything else going on, has been a lot. So you hit the nail on the head there. Guys, for those of y'all who don't know, when I started out doing podcasts, me and Bid did some of our first ever MLB podcast together. And actually, guys, Bid was a ball boy slash bat boy for the Atlanta Braves. And believe it or not, he's best known. You can go look at it on his profile picture on his social media for missing a ground ball. Look, Bid, we know you made plenty of plays, but we know you missed that one. You'll always be known for it.
Yeah. Every year that pops up, too. I mean, my buddy Austin Hyde every year tweets that at me. He pulls up the video, tweets it at me, just says, never forget, every single year. So that's my profile picture on all my social media now. Got some good out of it. Got roasted by Jeff Rancourt. Happens to the best of us.
Hey, you know, it's better to be known about doing being known for doing something than doing nothing. So yeah. Bid's already got the easy in right there for something he's known for doing. But Bid is known to also know a lot about baseball, guys. So we got some good stuff cooked up for y'all.
Weird claim to fame, but I'll take it.
Yeah, it's definitely a solid claim for fame. I wish I had a claim for fame like that, getting roasted by Jeff Francoeur. But anyway, though, guys, as y'all know right now, the hottest topic in the MLB is Shohei Ohtani. And is he gambling or not on these games? What exactly is going on? Bid, it's just real jumbled up here about what's really going on with Ohtani. He had his meeting yesterday where he kind of addressed the press and whatnot, didn't answer any questions. Bid, what do you think's going on here? And just give us what you think about this.
So the weirdest thing to me, and just to catch everybody up, the initial statement from Ipe Mitsuhara, the old translator, was that he had been gambling, that he lost $4.5 million, that Shohei paid it off willingly, whatever. Shohei's reps came out and essentially confirmed that story, corroborated that. But then the next day backtracked and said, wait a minute, no, this isn't what happened. Shohei's actually a victim of theft here, which was the same statement that he gave yesterday. I would be inclined to believe that had they not come out initially saying something else. That's where I think things get fishy. I'm not necessarily accusing him of being the one gambling, although there have been a couple of pictures and videos that have come out the last few days. Have you seen the one of him, March Madness, last year?
Yeah.
That's the face of a man that's got 100K on a 16-leg parlay if I've ever seen it. But I'm not sure if that's the case. I think one explanation for them flip-flopping the story also could be maybe he was the one in debt and Shohei had agreed to pay off his debt without knowing how much money that was. Or maybe Mitsuhara was indebted that much. Maybe Shohei knew, but he basically lied to Shohei about who he was in debt to. Or maybe Shohei's reps just bungled the whole thing from the get-go. Maybe he didn't do anything wrong. Maybe he was a victim, and then for whatever reason, they corroborated that story. I don't know. I guess we'll find out real quick if he's lying, though, because now that there's a federal investigation involved, which is how this all was uncertain in the first place, and now that Shohei has come out and said directly to the media that he was lied to and stolen from, I mean, Ipe's got a hell of a defamation case if he wants it. Hell of a defamation case if he wants it, if Shohei did anything wrong here. I think we're going to find out what happens sooner rather than later. And let's be real, Major League Baseball will do what they have to do to protect Shohei Ohtani.
Absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, the MLB doesn't want their golden boy getting in trouble. And to be honest, they all wanted to come out here with a hot take. Ohtani should get suspended for 80 games, just like everybody did for PEDs and whatnot, for fixing games. I mean, he played for the freaking Angels, so I could definitely see how they lost $4.5 million that quick. But It turns out, I read this on Twitter earlier. This is from a pretty reliable source, and unfortunately, it kind of ruined me wanting to come on here for the really hot take against Ohtani and that he's a gambler and all this stuff. So it says, basically, this guy's basically a lawyer, and he says denying something is something that everyone does. Accusing someone of stealing while also cooperating with authorities and pressing charges creates liability for you. And if you're knowingly falsifying it, you can basically get in serious trouble here. As we all know, Ohtani's not going to come out. Essentially, to cut it short, Ohtani's not going to come out. He's not going to take this strong of stance against everything if he doesn't actually, if he actually knows what's going on and whatnot. And look, honestly, all of it checks out except for the fact, how do you not know that you're missing $4.5 million? Like, I get it. The guy's rich, but $4.5 million isn't a $20 bill. It's $4.5 million.
I will say, now having lived in California for a little bit,
yeah,
obviously I'm nowhere near Shohei's tax bracket here, but the taxes are legit. Sometimes a lot of money will come out that you don't know about. And the fact that it wasn't $4.5 million at once, yeah, it was several installations, I believe, of $500,000, which obviously still a lot of money. But for Shohei, between his actual salary with baseball and the endorsements that he made in the last 2 years, he made over $100 million. So 4.5 going missing over a span of 2 years, especially, we don't know all the responsibilities that Mitsuhara had for Shohei. We do know that he had other things he did for him outside of just translation. So there's a chance that he was actually there helping Shohei with his finances. And if that was the case, that makes it so much easier for him to take it himself and for him to go, hey, this money's gone, but, you know, taxes, this, that, and the other, whatever. So it's easier for that to go missing. For me, the bigger red flag is just the fact that they corroborated the story initially and walked it back. Because if something like this happened, and as you said, Shohei did really set himself up, if he's lying, he can be in a lot of trouble now, now that he made the statements that he made. Why not say that initially? I don't understand what the deal was to begin with. But like you said, I am kind of inclined after everything that's come out the last few days to say that, you know, he's probably innocent, or at least innocent adjacent. I don't think he's out here gambling $4.5 million.
Yeah, no, I would definitely agree with you on that. And honestly, one thing that does really help Shohei a little bit more, look, I know I was pretty hard on him yesterday, but one thing that does probably cooperate for him here is, like you said, that you probably didn't really tell him what the money was for and what he actually owed for the gambling debt. And so I think probably what happened, I mean, if you look, like, a lot of professional athletes and a lot of people who are rich, they get cheated out of money that they have, or, you know, get like taken advantage of from like this, is typically by someone who's considered a good friend from them. I mean, I would assume he considers this guy a good friend because he doesn't speak English. So there's that part of the entire thing right there. But also, too, like, he probably could have even paid it off for him, didn't really know what it was for. And then once he found out, and somebody who, like, maybe his financial analyst or whatever found out, they're like, dude, you're probably going to get in serious trouble here. Like, you didn't know what it was for. We have to, like, go completely against him. So, I mean, honestly, it probably does line up in his favor. But for me, being a hot takes guy, I want it to be that Ohtani was gambling on the Angels and lost his ass.
For me, being a Shohei fantasy owner, I like to believe that that's not what happened. But I mean, like you said just at the end there, I think that something like that, somebody could easily take that money out of his account for something else, something that would appear to be harmless. And then on the back end, he finds out it's an illegal bookmaking operation. That's under investigation with the federal government. And at that point, you got to pull out all the stops to get yourself out of it, which I think is what he's done the last few days.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, too, I mean, if you lose $4.5 million, you could have also lied to him and told him it was for something else. You know what I mean? So when you're down that bad and you know you can get $4.5 million, you're going to do anything you can that involves you not having to kill somebody. So it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. And hopefully Ohtani doesn't get suspended for his sake. Anyway, let's keep things cranking here. Me and Bid, obviously, those of y'all can see Bid right now. He's rocking a Braves jersey. Bid, what player's jersey is that?
This is nobody's jersey because it was cheaper when the gold ones first came out.
Okay.
The gold ones first came out, if they had a name on the back, it was like $350. If they didn't, it was like $100. And I was like, I'll take that one. Nobody has to know.
Yeah, dude, I waited like 6 months into this, like halfway through the season, and Fanatics had like a jersey special. I got the Acuna one for like $1.50. So nice. I got the gold Acuna one, even though he technically didn't contribute to the World Series. But anyway, though.
Hey, I will say this because I've seen people go at Ronald a lot for that the last couple of years since the World Series was won, saying, oh, Braves won without Acuna, he's not important, blah, 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 blah. Like, mostly like Mets fans, people like that who are also, you know, not
Jocker.
Important. But the Braves were not a very good team in the middle of the year last year. Remember that in outfield with Abraham Almonte? And like, they were not good team. If it weren't for the first half that Ronald Acuna had, they would not have been buyers at the deadline. Ronald was the MVP front runner at that point. 990 OPS, I think, something like that, was up there near the league leaders in home runs, stolen bases, was just killing the ball. If they're 5 or 10 wins below where they were at the deadline that year, they sell. They don't buy. They don't go out and get the guys that they got if they're further back than they were. And the only reason that they weren't further back was Ronald Acuña. So you got to give him some props.
No, yeah, for sure. Hey, I want to give him some props. It's my favorite player, so I'm always going to give him some props. Anyway, though, Bid, look, we and Bid obviously, guys, think the Braves are going to win the division. We think the Braves got a good shot at getting us another ring in here. You'll find out later our predictions on that. But anyway, Bid, we got to talk about it, man. What do you think will be the key for the Braves' success this season? Will it be a certain position? Will it be a certain player? What do you think is going to be the key for the Braves to repeat and keep winning this division that we own?
So there are a couple things. I think one of the big ones, though, is you look at how consistent that offense was all year last year. One guy that wasn't that great to begin with but turned it around was Michael Harris II. And I think he can build on what he did in the second half last season. You look at the numbers after, I believe, it June 1st, he was hitting .355, on base around .400, slugging close to .600. If he can do that over a full year, which looking at his numbers in spring training, like, he's been looking really good this spring. This is a guy that could go 30-30, and he would be, in most years, an MVP candidate, but probably with a couple of his teammates and a couple of the guys in LA, probably behind a few guys this year. But I think him taking that next step towards superstardom is going to be a huge thing for the Braves. And, you know, Jared Kelnick hitting like he did finally today wouldn't hurt either. But I think Michael Harris taking that next step could really be what separates the Braves from what they've been to what they can be, and put them over the top that much better than what they even have been.
Oh, I think that's a pretty good one, because, you know, honestly, if you didn't pick that one, I was going to go there. So I'm going to pivot to the other player on the roster. I think it's a major key here. And I'm actually going to go with our guy, Chris Sale, here, which I honestly thought that was where you're going to go. Look, if I've learned one thing, Bid, is being a Braves fan, it is in AA we trust, no questions we ask. We just march to his orders. And Alex Anthopoulos has never let us down. I mean, the guy basically got us a World Series outfield you talked about earlier for nothing. And he basically got us Chris Sale for Vaughn Grisham. I mean, Vaughn could swing the bat, but he could not play the field to save his life. He wasn't good enough to be a DH, and he definitely couldn't play in the outfield. He made a lot of errors at shortstop and second base. He just was not the guy we needed in the field. I think he flipped him into Chris Sale. I mean, he said it. I heard an interview the other day, and he said Chris Sale never actually had an offseason over the last 3 years where he'd been healthy the entire offseason. Chris Sale's playing the best baseball of his life. I mean, the Braves, for crying out loud, are pitching gurus. We've done so much with such little talent in our pitching staff in the past. Chris Sale, I mean, the guy before he got hurt was the best pitcher in baseball. He basically single-handedly won the Red Sox a World Series. I mean, the guy is elite and has elite stuff. If we get a healthy Chris Sale, it's going to be scary hours in Atlanta when you throw him in there. I mean, he's the third pitcher behind Max Fried and Spencer Strider. If you throw him in there, it's going to be tough sledding coming to Atlanta.
Oh, yeah. No, definitely agree with that. And I know that's funny you said you thought that's where I was going to go. If I didn't say Michael Harris, that's where I was going to go. Had to give a special shout out to Kelnick, too. But Chris Sale is one of the most important players on the roster this year. And obviously, he has the long track record with injuries. But the thing is, it's not just one recurring issue with him. A lot of these have been freak injuries. And that's something that Anthopoulos has spoken about as well. Is like, there's no reason for him to do this again. Like, obviously, he had Tommy John. Like, you could keep an eye on his arm, keep an eye on his elbow. But some of the injuries that he had, like, they're not recurring issues. He doesn't have just a bunch of chronic injuries that'll keep bouncing up on him. And if he's able to stay healthy, which the Braves have indicated they're going to take it a little easy with him, probably try to keep him around like the 150 innings mark this year. If they can do that, then, I mean, he's still maybe not as good as he was in Chicago back in the day in that 2018 year with Boston, but he's still a damn good pitcher. And he's somebody that could really help this team out as well, especially in October.
I 100% agree with you, Ben. Hit the nail on the head there. Let's keep it moving on here, guys. We got a lot of stuff to get to. Let's talk about the upcoming Rookie of the Year, Ben. I think the Rookie of the Year in the AL is going to be a stacked up position, way more than the NL. We both kind of came to the agreement. It's between Yamamoto and it's between Jackson Chourio in the NL. In the AL, though, there's a lot of guys. Who do you think is going to get it done here, Ben?
So I've gone back and forth, and originally, you know, coming into spring training, all the talk, all the buzz was around Jackson Holliday. And Jackson Holliday, obviously, he didn't make the opening day roster, maybe just for service time manipulation, maybe because they've got guys like Jordan Westberg that they feel like could play just as well at the beginning and help them with the roster and service time manipulation there. But he's going to come up before midseason, probably around May. He's going to play really good baseball. But I don't think that he's the favorite, in my opinion, to win it at this point. Just because you look at the potential that he has as much potential as anybody, but he's still young. He hasn't shown as much power as some of the other guys just yet. And somebody like Wyatt Langford has the same hit tool just about, and he has significantly more power. Maybe Jackson Holliday's hit tool will exceed that of Wyatt Langford eventually. But at the beginning, you compare his hit tool with his power, and he's the guy, in my opinion, that is the favorite to win Rookie of the Year. Obviously, making the opening day roster, probably in a DH for the Rangers. You look at what he did in the he was in college last year. You look at what he did once they drafted him. He immediately came up and started swinging it. Spring training has continued. He's hit 6 home runs. He's got an OPS well over 1,000. Last year in the minor leagues, he had an 1157 OPS. And he even stole 12 bases too. So he's a legitimate 20 stolen base threat on top of the fact that he's probably going to hit 30 or more home runs. I think that's the guy, but you also have to keep an eye on Baltimore. There are too many guys in that franchise that could potentially come up and take it from him. But as of now, that's my guy.
Yeah. I mean, we got to go with Langford here. I think Holliday's got some good stuff. I think there's some other guys in the AL who are pretty competitive here, but I agree. I mean, like, Langford feels like that just all around. Like, he's like the quarterback who gets drafted in the NFL. You know what I mean? They're supposed to sit behind somebody, and you watch him play one spring training game, and you're like, all right, nah, you're not sitting behind anybody. Get your ass in there. You're a stud. Like, this guy, when he was at Florida last year, I mean, let's put it this way. You don't hear about a lot of these guys when they're in college playing baseball. College baseball is probably gets the least coverage probably of any college sport. And Wyatt Langford, Paul Skeens, I mean, these guys were household names. And the fact that he's come up here and already surpassed these guys so quickly and get in the MLB, like, it is very rare you see a prospect get up there and get to this level. I mean, I think the Rangers just look at it as keeping him at AAA is just like a waste of his talent. Like, he can help the team now. He can be a stud now. I think Langford gets up there and tears it up. Hot take here. I wouldn't be shocked to see Langford make an all-star team this year as a rookie.
I completely agree. And I will say he does remind me of another guy that came out of Florida. Not quite the same player, but you look at the talent they have, the power that they have, and just how major league ready they were so quickly. In that regard, he kind of reminds me of Pete Alonso with the hit tool and the power that could come out immediately out of Florida. And I remember a few years ago when all the talk was, will it be Pete Alonso, Fernando Tatis, who's going to be the best rookie? I said it was going to be Pete Alonso because I didn't think that he would have a tough adjustment period. I thought he was more big league ready. Obviously, both of them are studs, and I'd probably take Tatis now. But at the time, I think Pete Alonso is more big league ready. Maybe Tatis is the better player, but kind of similar to here, maybe Jackson Holliday will be the better player, but Wyatt Langford's more MLB ready. Wyatt Langford has more game power right now, in addition to the crazy raw power that he has. And, you know, the Florida connection makes it easier as well. But I just think he's going to step in and immediately be a big-time power threat for the Rangers.
Yeah, also call me crazy, too. I feel like the Orioles have hit a problem where they have too much young talent and they don't have enough positions to put them. I think they feel like they would have let some of these guys come up, maybe like Westberg or like one of these other guys that they're bringing up here to start the season out. They come up here and they play well, and then they're like, all right, we need to flip some, like turn three guys into one guy. Let's say that Mike Trout's not happy down in LA, and they're like, hey, we like Westberg, we like some of these other young guys y'all got out there, give us a couple of them, we'll send Mike Trout your way, you know, you plug him in and there's Jackson Holliday's spot freed up.
I wonder how much that would cost them at this point if the Angels and Trout do decide to move on there, just because he's owed so much money, he's so injury prone. I guess if the Orioles agreed to, you know, if the Angels, I mean, agreed to keep bunch of money on the books there and give the Orioles a deal in that regard, maybe the Orioles could send more talent that way. But as of right now, it seems like the Angels, if they're going to trade Mike Trout, would have to add significant cash to the deal. He's still got a long way to go, and he's played in, I think, about 50% of his games over the last 3 or 4 years, so not really not a lot of consistency there. Obviously still one of the best to do it when he's playing. So there would be value there for the O's. I'm surprised they didn't do that. Obviously, they went out and got Corbin Burns, but I'm surprised they didn't go add another pitcher with the young field talent that they have. You mentioned guys like Westberg. Obviously, they're not going to move Jackson Holliday or Gunnar Henderson. But guys like Westberg, Ryan Mountcastle, I'm surprised that they didn't try to make any moves for maybe a Dylan Cease on top of Corbin Burns. Because look at that rotation. They've got guys. They've got, like you mentioned earlier, also Grayson Rodriguez is going to be a great pitcher for them this year. But if they could add one more guy, if they could have turned a Westberg into Dylan Cease, they could have turned Ryan Mountcastle into Dylan Cease or whoever else, that seems like that could really put them over the top. So I am a little surprised that with Jackson Holliday waiting in the wings, they didn't pull the trigger on a move like that.
Yeah, and I mean, like, we could sit here all day and name their prospects. I mean, they got, like, Mayo in the minors. They got Hjerstad down there, too. I mean, if he didn't get hurt, he was supposed to be better than all these guys. So, I mean, and he's still pretty good ever since come back from his injury. So, like, they have way too many young guys. At some point, they're going to have to flip them into it. It's just, I think it's just a matter of the right piece, kind of like you said. And didn't they just get a new owner, too? I may have misread.
They did get a new owner, actually. I think it was the day or the day before they traded for Corbin Burnes.
New owner syndrome.
And it is back in the news now because their old owner, Peter Angelos, actually passed away the other day. 94 years old, hell of a
R.I.P.
life. R.I.P. But he did pass away the other day. And it's always weird when stuff like that happens to me. This guy, he sells the team and almost immediately he passes on. It's weird that type of thing seems to happen a lot. He like lost what he was living for almost.
It's always weird. Hey, well, this could be the Orioles' year. We'll get to that later. Trust me. Let's keep things rolling here, though, Bid. Let's talk about our AL MVP hot takes here. I'll lead us off with this one. For the AL MVP, Bid, I have this player that I am absolutely loving that I think is going to get it done. Look, I might be a little biased here because I am known a big fanboy of this guy, but I'm going with Julio Rodriguez. And he's plus 800 right now. I believe he's fourth or fifth in the odds. And when I just look at it, like, Julio Rodriguez last year, I know he started out the season really poor. Then he had that stretch where he hit like 11 home runs in 13 games or something insane like that. He broke a record for home runs and games in a row. I mean, this guy is a five-tool player. I've watched games before where if you hit a ball in the air in the outfield, it's not touching the ground. Even if it's a wall scraper, it's not getting out of the park. Julio Rodriguez is bringing everything back. That is his fly zone out there in center field, and you're not hitting anything over his head. I mean, this guy is insane. The things he does for the Seattle team. I honestly think, like, if you told me to name five best players in the league, I'm probably only naming Acuna before I name Julio Rodriguez. I mean, this guy does every single part of the game, and I think he's going to take the next jump. He had his sophomore season. It's time, his junior year in the MLB. He's ready to take the crown and show everybody the trident.
I think that's a good pick. I like the trident's a nice touch there at the end, too. I think that's a good pick. Like you mentioned, how he did the second half of the year, had him in fantasy. So I was obviously monitoring that closely last year, the way that he kind of popped off in the second half after getting out of the gate a little slow. I think that's a really good pick. I think eventually he is going to take that next step, which being, like you said, one of the five best players in baseball. However, I have him as a contender, but not the winner this year, because Juan Soto wants to make $500 million. Juan Soto's first year in New York, obviously, not everybody's built for the moment. You see guys like Joey Gallo that got up there, couldn't cut it. I think Alex Verdugo's not going to cut it there either, to be honest with you. Juan Soto seems like a guy who's going to get there and he's going to excel. He's going to have pretty good lineup protection now. Obviously, in San Diego, things were a little hit or miss last year. Very, very slump-prone team out there. Yeah. Machado wasn't the way that he should be. Tatis had a couple skids last year. But this year, I think that he's really going to excel in New York. You look at the short porch in right field too. There's no reason why he shouldn't hit 40 home runs. Even in a so-called down year last year, he still had an OPS well over 900. He still hit more than 30 home runs. He still had an on-base percentage of 410. Like, he's still going to do that. I think the numbers are going to jump a little bit from a slugging perspective, just having that short porch in right field and being in a walk year. He wants $500 million. There's no reason why he won't have another on-base percentage well over 400. And there's no reason for him not to hit 40 home runs now in a more friendly environment like Yankee Stadium. And obviously, I mean, friendly from a dimension standpoint, not a fan standpoint, but you know what I mean. I think that's something that'll really help him. And, you know, going into a walk or two, no better time to do it.
That was a nice touch you added there with telling us what you meant by the friendliness there. Look, You made a pretty compelling argument there. I mean, it's tough to go against it. I will say I am worried about one guy on his team actually beating both these guys out with Aaron Judge. I mean, Judge missed, I think, like almost 50 games last year and still hit over 40 home runs. I mean, it feels like if this guy makes contact in that ballpark, it's a home run. Look, I've definitely tried to poke holes in Aaron Judge's game before. When he hit the 62 home runs, he made me shut up. And I mean, even last year when he couldn't stay healthy, which was my biggest argument against him, I was still amazed at what he could do when he's in the lineup. I would say that's pretty much the only guy who could possibly maybe overshadow him and take it from him is Judge.
Yeah, and I actually I had some notes on Judge too, because I thought about giving it to him. It's like you said, last year he did miss a lot of games. He played 106 games last year. He still hit 37 home runs. This year they're looking to give him a little bit of load management, which I'm not typically in favor of. But for a guy like Aaron Judge that seems like he needs it, I think that that's something that could work, especially because you can DH him some days. You give him some off. Let's say you give him 12 full days off. You let him DH 30 games and let him play the field the rest of that. Let him play 150 games. Looking at his home runs from last year, if he plays 150 games and extrapolate that over it, it's 52 home runs. So there's no reason for him to not be a 50 home run player if this load management process that Aaron Boone's working on works for him. Obviously, time will tell if it does. Maybe he gets hurt in April and none of this matters. But I mean, if it works, there's no reason for him to not hit another 50 home runs. And if he does, then he could push Soto. He could push Julio Rodriguez. Yeah. He's as good as anybody with the bat.
No, he definitely is. He's definitely in the top five conversation. I 100% agree with you on that. I'm pretty sure he got hurt off a fluky injury too, where like the bullpen opened or something when he slammed to the wall.
But that injury is now something he said is going to stay with him the rest of his career. His toe, big toe, which is why. And that's a lot of weight to be running around on a big toe too. I think he's about 6'7", 280 or something like that. So that's a lot to be running around there.
Well, he can just jog around the bases like Giancarlo does.
Yeah. I hope for his sake that it doesn't get that bad, because that guy can't move these days. That's tough to watch. My dad just got his knee replaced. He's moving faster than Giancarlo Stanton right now. It's a tough look for him.
Yeah, I'm out of shape as hell right now, and I think I can move faster than him at this point. So, anyway, it's going to be an interesting battle to watch it battle out. I assume y'all probably know for the NL MVP, we're both picking Acuna to repeat, obviously, so there's no real conversation there. Let's talk about possibly the worst, most interesting division bid in all of baseball. And we're going to talk about the NL and AL Centrals here. First of all, let's start things out in the NL Central here, and I'll start us out with this one. Look, Ben, I love the Cincinnati Reds to win this division. I know they have some injuries, but if they can get Matt McClain back this season and they get Lodolo back, I like what they've done with this team. They add Candelario in there to come in and play third base for them. They got some other solid guys. I mean, Ellie De La Cruz, Spencer Steer, Encarnacio Strand, I can't remember the other outfielder's name, but I mean, they're loaded up there. They add Frankie Montas here. You have, in my opinion, a top five closer in all of baseball, and Alexis Diaz coming out to save games for you. You have a solid rotation with Hunter Green in there. I think this Reds team was just too young last year. I mean, you remember they called all these guys up to the MLB at one point in time, and they were the hottest team in baseball. I think they won like 13 out of 15 games or something insane like that. They made a push for first place, and then they kind of fell off. They had some injuries. They had a lot of injuries. I mean, really, it was their pitching. Their pitching was just terrible. They had so many injuries to all their pitchers. These guys that are thrown up there didn't even belong in the big leagues. I think this Reds team is young, hungry, doesn't know any better. I was telling people last year they reminded me of the young Braves when they took the division. Well, this year they remind me even more of the young Braves. Give me the Reds to win the division. I believe they're like plus 360 to win the division. I think it's a great bet.
Yeah, I like it. I like what you mentioned too about that parallel between them and the young Braves. It does kind of seem like last year they were in that 2017 Braves category. Yeah. That's when the Braves started calling up guys like Ozzy Albies, guys like Max Fried. And then 2018 obviously is when everything kind of clicked for them. They won the division, were able to get back to the postseason. That's definitely a possibility for the Reds, especially if that pitching holds up, which could be a little bit rough there. But like you said, this is one of the worst divisions in baseball. And to tell you the truth, I had to even flip a coin to decide who I wanted to I was gonna win this division. I am going to go with the Cubs, adding Craig Counsell now as the manager. I think he's going to do a lot of good things there. I do think Cody Bellinger is going to take a pretty significant step back this year. But that could be offset by some guys like Christopher Morel, by guys like Dansby Swanson not falling flat on his face at the end of the year. I mean, because that's the guy who went to David Ross, went to the GM as well and said, like, hey, we're not going to sell. We need to buy. We need to do this. And then he didn't get a hit the rest of the season and essentially, like, spiraled them out of the race. But I think he's going to bounce back. I think he's going to play more like he did in the first half or more like he did before he completely fell off in September. I think Seiya Suzuki is going to have a huge year as well. You look at what he did down the stretch last year, aside from that fly ball that he dropped that you could argue cost them the division fully or the wild card spot fully. I think he's going to have a really big year. I think he's going to click. I think he's going to play probably more games than he did last year. He did have a little injury bug go around, but I think Seiya Suzuki is going to be a superstar for them this year and really propel them to the next level. So I have them winning the division, but it's I don't think anybody wins 90 games here. I think the Reds have a good shot as well.
Yeah, no, 100%. Yeah, I definitely forgot Will Benson's name there when we were talking. But yeah, no, I agree with you, man. And, you know, I think we're going to put this in his own segment. Obviously, we're running shorter on time here. Let's just talk about the Cardinals real quick, man. And honestly, this Cardinals team is a total joke, in my opinion. They have all the talent in the world when it comes to hitting, but their pitching is atrocious. You're telling me Lance Lynn and 40-year-old Sonny Gray were the fixes to your rotational problem? I think the Cardinals thinking they can fix the rotation with this is doing young players like Jordan Walker and doing guys like Goldschmidt, Arenado, like almost a slap in the face to these guys. Like, if you want to compete in baseball, you got to go spend the money, and their rotation is a total joke. I think this is going to be the exact same thing we saw last year. They'll put up a lot of runs, but they're going to be losing to teams like the Tigers, the Royals, even the Pirates left and right.
Yeah, I on the one hand, I like that they did something, right? Like, they had a bunch of issues. They went out and tried to solve their rotation woes in the offseason. I like that they did something, but I almost feel like they should have just torn it down instead. You know, you can move Arenado and move Goldschmidt. You still have significant young talent behind them. If you move on from them, get some prospects, reload. I think Sonny Gray is going to be pretty good. But past that,
he's already hurt, though.
He's not going to be a Cy Young candidate again. I don't see him coming in second Cy Young this year. But Lance Lynn's pretty much done for. I don't know. I don't feel good about the rotation at all behind Sonny Gray. Miles Michaelis is not the guy anymore either. Nolan Gorman made headlines the other day.
He's solid.
He dropped off. He started eating popcorn with coconut oil instead of seed oils in it. And he said all his inflammation's gone, which I've heard a lot of stuff about that, but I'm not sure if that'll make you – I'm not sure how much of a difference that's going to make for him. But if it makes a difference, then, you know, more power to him. Hopefully he'll come out and hit another 30 home runs this year. But it's not going to be enough. They're going to fall flat on their face again. Probably win 75 games, maybe move Arenado and Goldschmidt by the deadline. It's not looking good, I don't think. Hope I'm wrong, but
yeah,
it is a wonderful division.
But. Yeah, I mean, they have so much. It's like they have like the perfect gap with the young talent and the new and the old guys in the lineup. It's just the pitching is just not there. Like, they have literally like a 9 out of 10 batting lineup, and they have like a 2 out of 10 pitching.
Yeah, no, I agree. And they do have a lot of depth offensively as well. So that there's a chance that if maybe Lance Lynn does turn back the clock, or if they do get some surprise contributors in that rotation this year, and it's enough for them to compete, then they do have young talent that they could flip for an arm if they do choose to go in that direction, which is more feasible for them in the NL Central than it would be in the East or the West, obviously.
Yeah.
The
weaker division.
If they're in the NL East, they tear it down. If they're in the NL West, they tear it down. In the NL Central, maybe they'll have a shot. Their rotation has to hold up. I'm not really sure. I probably have them pegged for third or fourth place right now. Probably, I'd say third with the changes that the Brewers made. But I don't know. I don't think it's going to end the way those fans want it to this year.
Yeah, I agree. I actually have the Brewers coming in last in this division. Anyway, though, Bid, I think we're running out of time, so we'll skip talking about the AL Central here, who's going to also be a terrible division. Let's just go ahead and let's go with what the people want to hear. Let's talk about our NL and ALCS, and then let's talk about our World Series. Bid, who do you have playing in the NLCS and winning?
Atlanta Braves. Braves Dodgers to me is what the league needs. Obviously, they have that. They had that in 2020. They had that rematch in 2021 in the NLCS. Obviously, Dodgers took the first one, won it all. Braves took the second one, won it all after that. I think that's what the league needs right now, because these teams have only gotten better since they last met. The Dodgers didn't have Shohei Ohtani. The Dodgers didn't have Freddie Freeman. Obviously, the Braves did. But the Braves have gotten better since then. They hadn't won 100 games in quite some time in that last meeting. Now they've won back-to-back. Now they've won 100 games back-to-back season.
Yep.
The Dodgers continue to get better, continue to buy basically the best players that money can buy. Their lineup does get a little weak in the second half. I'm not really sure how I feel about that once you get past Teoscar Hernandez in that lineup. Pretty top heavy, but if their pitching can stay healthy, because I think Yamamoto is going to be just fine. I would have Churio edging him out because I think it'll take him a little bit of time. It'll take him a little bit of time to get a grip on it. Like Kodai Senga last year, his first month or two wasn't quite as good, but then it clicked. I think it's going to click for him too. don't think it'll click enough for him to overtake Churio in the Rookie of the Year race, but I think he's going to be just fine. Walker Buehler's pumping 97. He looks good. He ought to be back by May. Tyler Glasnow is going to get hurt, obviously miss half the year, but if he comes back, because he will get hurt, but if he comes back in time for postseason, he's going to be dangerous. So, and they have all the young pitching as well. They've got guys like Bobby Miller, Emmett Sheehan, Gavin Stone. They've got guys there that they can throw out for depth. I think that them running into the Braves is what baseball needs in the NLCS. You put the two heavyweights on national television in front of each other. That's going to be great for baseball, especially with all the storylines in it, with all the money the Dodgers spent, with how good the Braves are, with Freddie Freeman being a Dodger now, with Yamamoto and Ohtani. Like, there's a lot of storylines there, and it's essentially money versus homegrown talent in a lot of ways. And I think that's the series that people would need. And I think the Braves would actually come out on top there, especially if that rotation stays healthy, because that's really plagued the Braves in the postseason these last 2 years. So if their rotation stays healthy, then this could really be an all-time seven-game series, I think. But I got the Braves in seven coming out of that.
Okay, yeah, I got the Braves coming out as well. I mean, as y'all can tell, we're homers, but at least our team's the best team in the league, so it's different when you're a homer and you got the best team. But I'm actually going to go off the wall pick here. I'm going to go with the Cincinnati Reds to make the run, kind of like the Diamondbacks did, kind of like we've seen the younger Braves teams do in the past. I just feel like this Reds team's got the reinforcements coming. They can maybe take an arm or two at the trade deadline. They don't know any better. They're the young team. I think they can get here and play the Braves, but I got the Braves beating them in five, actually, and kind of saying, I'm not so fast, Junior.
Yeah, I mean, they'll be stopped eventually, right? But I like that pick, though. I like that if the Dodgers come out flat like they have the last few years in the NLDS and they line up against the Reds, then that exciting young team can actually do some damage there. I like it. I don't know. I wouldn't pick it, but I like it.
Hey, that's all that matters, as long as you like it. Last one here, guys. Let's go to the AL here. I'll start us off real quick here with the AL. I'm actually going to go with the Orioles here to get it deep. We just talked about what happened with their owner and whatnot. I got the Orioles here. And, you know, there's a lot of good teams in the AL to go against. I'm going to say they're going to play the Yankees, though, and we're going to go with the AL East ALCS here. And I like this Orioles team. I feel like they're young. They don't know any better. Like I said, I mean, they're going to be able to bring up studs, and at any point in time, they can sell off and go get that big player on the market and stack their team up. I already think they're stacked as is without adding that extra player in here. I think this Baltimore team is young and ready to go on the run. Last year, they got a taste of the postseason and came up short. Now they come back with Corbin Burns. They got this nice little rotation going as well with John Means getting back right. Give me the Orioles to get it done and go to the World Series.
I like it. I have the Orioles winning too. I have them beating the Rangers, though, instead of the Yankees. I think that Rangers lineup is going to be too good. I don't know about their pitching. I think if one of DeGrom or Scherzer comes back healthy, then their pitching will hold up. But let's be honest, that's a big if at this point with those two. And even if Scherzer comes back, he might not have it anymore anyway. So it's kind of a big ask there. But that lineup is too good to lose, in my opinion. I think that's going to propel them pretty far. And I know I said too good to lose, but they will lose to the Orioles in the ALCS. I'm with you on that. I think Baltimore's good. They're only going to get better. Corbin Burns is a huge addition for them. Jackson Holliday will be up. They've got the infield. They've got some good bats in the outfield. Hopefully Cedric Mullins will bounce back a little bit. Not quite the same year last year that he had 2 years ago. But, you know, I think the Orioles and the Braves would be a great series in the World Series. I think that'd be a really good matchup. I think that young team, the Orioles, they followed a lot of the same model that the Braves did to get to where they are. I would love to see the Orioles get there.
All right, babe. We got about a minute left on here. Who you got winning the World Series, man?
How many times I got to do this? Come on.
Yes, sir. Go Braves.
This is the year. You look at the Braves lineup, that pitching, if everything holds together, Chris Sale stays healthy. I mean, there's no reason for them not to win the World Series this year. World Series or bust, as everybody's been saying. It's a mentality thing at this point. They came out soft last year in the postseason. Can't do that again.
Yeah, I'm with Ben on this one, man. The Braves were the hungry team. We wanted more than everybody else. Stacked up lineup, stacked roster. Give me the Bravos. All right, guys. That's all we got time for today. It's about to kick us out here on the Zoom meeting. Ben, it's been a pleasure as always, man.
Yes, sir. Good to be back.
Hey, go Braves. Best of luck to everybody this MLB season. We'll talk to you all again soon.
Sir.